This is Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour, joined with Jan Hocken to talk about Moana. Moana is a 2016 animated Disney musical directed by John Musker and Ron Clements. It focuses on Moana, the teenage heir to the royal line of a remote Pacific Island community, and her mission to end a mysterious blight threatening them. Moana, played by Auliyi Cravalho, grows up on an island that her ancestors have inhabited for several generations. She wants to venture beyond the island's protective reef, but her father, the chief, played by Temuera Morrison, forbids it. Eventually, she comes to terms with how she will inherit the throne and must prepare for her duties within the community. When a mysterious blight threatens the community with starvation, though, she redoubles her efforts to leave in search of an answer. Her paternal grandmother, played by Rachel House, tells her a secret. Their people were once deep-sea voyagers, and there is a supply of seaworthy vessels hidden on the island. She also tells how the demigod Maui is responsible for the blight because he stole the heart of the creator goddess Tafiti, which appears as a green, amulet-sized stone that the ocean gives Moana when she is a toddler. If she can get to Maui and convince him to put the heart back, the blight will disappear. Accompanied by two animal sidekicks, she takes one of the boats, finds Maui, played by Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, and slowly but surely convinces him to help her complete the mission. So it was a fun film to watch. I suggested it because my stepdaughter loves it, and I've watched it half a dozen times already. But it was also immensely popular in 2016 and through 2017. But it is not without controversy and criticism either.
One line of criticism follows almost every Disney film, and there are specific elements of the criticism that we'll take up in terms of how the story's told, how the protagonists are situated, and how the conflicts are resolved. But there's also the broader issue of the commodification of indigenous or marginalized cultures and communities, the commodification of childhood with all these Disney spinoff products that are predictable, where Disney inhabits the imagination of millions of children around the world, and not only through how they tell the stories of these interesting people. Often there are stories about Africa, Asia, in this case the Pacific, but also then how the profits are made and spent. And that, and there's much of the criticism is along those lines, how hideous the little figurines are, plastic figurines that initially came out of the screening, little coconut characters that are a really predictable way of casting Polynesians and their association with coconuts.
The worst I heard of was a Halloween costume that's actually a bodysuit of the character Maui, who has tattoos about all of his great feats. And so this is literally a commodification of brown tattooed skin. But if you just look at the box office sales alone, which were well over $600 million, but the film itself had a budget of only $150 million, they made almost, if not a $500 million profit on this, and a lot of critics have pointed out, how is that money going back to the indigenous peoples that this story originates from in a lot of ways? And Disney's response is that, hey, we created a $500,000 scholarship fund for Pacific Islanders at a university, and that's clearly not enough. There's this immense value that came with that story, and it is not being shared. It is not going back into the community, which has historically been plundered by the white civilization that Disney comes from.
And Disney, in response to the history of criticisms around these issues, has made a better effort with this film than in the past, and enlisting the Oceana Storytellers Association. Many indigenous people, Pacific Islanders, were involved in consulting on the film and creating the music score, which is fabulous. There's attention to ethnographic detail, even though they miss in important ways. It's a very rich, visually rich, with a film with a lot of ethnographic character to it. So I think it would be good to talk about that line of criticism that argues that this is basically a Western story dressed in Pacific Islanders' clothes, and what that means to think about a Western story versus an Indigenous story.
One BuzzFeed response to Moana compares the major plot points, or some of them, to Lord of the Rings, which is, to a lot of people, an essentially European-derived story based off of mythologies that relate to Indigenous peoples and their storytelling, but is itself fiction. That doesn't really hold a lot of water, but what does resonate more with me is the attention to the storytelling values of the Indigenous peoples of Polynesia, and especially how the character Maui is paired with a goddess complement, and that there being this way of telling these stories and of the sacred power or life events that they try to envision don't make sense from an Indigenous perspective without that complementarity, and that the film, in only bringing Maui and not his complement Hina, a goddess associated with death and the night, but also sometimes Maui's mother or his wife, that without that, the story is lopsided.
There's always this tension in any film or piece of creative work. Even history itself is creative in many ways. What departures from known histories represent a violence of some kind, a form of cultural violence. And I'm kind of wary about some criticisms that assume that there's a kind of complete unanimity or integrity or wholeness to Indigenous traditions. One of my favorite anthropologists, Ganenath Obeyasekera, who's also psychoanalytic as well as a Sri Lankan anthropologist, said there's a tendency among Western critics of the Western canon, to assume that Indigenous people don't have their own struggles with parental figures, that don't also want to separate, who don't also deal with their own destructiveness and have their own, as he says, Oedipal conflicts. So I like the fact that the male demagogue was a kind of a vulnerable guy and challenged conventional notions of maleness. Moana was her resistance as a kind of girl power figure, was not in her fighting skills. It was in her voyaging skills and in her ability to confront fear. So she was very different than a Wonder Woman character. And the denouement is leaving the village and primary attachments, going through a vision quest or a confrontation of your fears. And in this case, returning to her community, which departs in many ways from the Western tale of development, where the hero leaves a realm of dependency behind. So I think this story has a lot to say for it.
John Musker, one of the directors, basically said that this film is in part trying to respond to a mystery in the history of Polynesian peoples, namely that about 3,500 years ago, people started to explore and colonize the islands of the western region we now call Polynesia, which is the various island formations across the Pacific that are east of Southeast Asia. That colonization process seemed to stop, at least in its eastward expansion, around 1000 BC, and didn't really pick up again definitively until 500 or 600 CE, leaving a 1500-year pause. And this story takes up what could have sparked the immense colonization of the rest of the Pacific Islands in a very short amount of time, archaeologically speaking, after that long pause. And this is what some critic commenters have held up as what is really noteworthy about the film, is it trying to restore that history and that amazing feat. Because for a long time, peoples of the Pacific Islands were considered savages and reliant on Stone Age technology. It was just inconceivable that they could have used Stone Age technology and navigation practices to navigate the open ocean. This was churned over in 1976 when the Polynesian Voyaging Society, Hokulea, embarked on a set of voyages using only the kind of canoes that their ancestors would have used and only the kinds of navigation practices that they would have used, and were able to reproduce the travels. And that this film, in focusing on the isolation of the Multanui community, somewhat is at odds with history, because the long pause itself wasn't a period of isolation. It was a pause of eastward expansion. Whereas this community is not going to any of the other already colonized islands, when that was actually the reality for many island nation peoples.
I mean, it departs from the South Pacific portrayal of Gauguin, where these islands are places of caste as primitives, as a kind of romantic places of retreat for the Western troubled soul, and their total backdrops to a Western quest for comfort and sanctuary in the world. And here they are the active agents in their history. They're voyagers and skills that have suffered some trauma that led them into retreat. So it could make you curious. And there are some curricula available now that take this film and draw on the curiosity that's stimulated by the film. But for me, the problematic aspect of that story, kind of watching it as a psychologist interested in childhood, is that the story in the film about why this island retreated in insularity, kind of a PTSD story. The father had suffered a loss of his friend at sea. Then the world beyond the horizons of the island were seen as frightfully dangerous. So retreated into, in this crazy way, into insularity. And then the daughter comes along and kind of recovers through her grandmother, which is nice, the spirit of the voyager, and confronts the fear and goes beyond the horizon of the village. But it does imply that this is a self-inflicted trauma that has produced this insularity of the island. Certainly the film could have done a lot more with that.
In closing, I'd like to point out that this is a film we like and think that you should watch because of the conversations that it gives rise to. You can get it at the Multnomah County Library. You can also see it at least one more time in a Portland City Park on Saturday, August 19th. It will be showing at Glen Haven Park in the evening. That's out on Northeast 82nd and Siskiyou. And great resource for having some of those conversations is what's been called the Moana Syllabus blog page, and that is moanasyllabus.wordpress.com. We'll link to that on the website. Jan and I are going to be talking a little bit more. If you want to listen to that, check into the website in a few days when we get the show posted, and it'll be attached as a supplement to this conversation. Thanks, Jan, for talking about the children's film Moana with me today.
Thanks. It's been fun.
So I'm Joe Clement for the Olmo Variety Hour, back with Jan Hawken to talk a little bit more about Moana. In the last part of our on-air conversation, you were talking about the trauma of the chief character almost drowning at sea, and that as an emotional and narrative basis for the historic withdrawal from sea voyaging that the film is supposed to partially be an answer to. And there's another figure who experiences what I think is an even greater trauma, and that's Maui, who historically has sometimes been characterized as a human, other times as a god. In this film, they characterize him as a demigod, originally human, and he was thrown into the ocean by his own parents and saved by the gods, and that this seems to form the basis for the Maui character's development and his or self-regarding issues.
Yeah, I have been interested for some time in trauma narratives and narratives of development in indigenous communities. I spent some time in at Pine Ridge years ago on the topic of domestic violence, and became very interested in the story of White Buffalo Calf Woman, which also is a story of trauma where a man meets White Buffalo calf woman in the road and ravages her, tries to kill her. The other man approaches her with a peace pipe, and that is the man that survives in the story. And it is about the potential and out of trauma to become very destructive and harmful, particularly towards women, the source of your being. There isn't anything like that in Christian mythology of the, and in many everyday trauma narratives, the story is something happens to you and you're diminished, but not that you become destructive. Here there is a lot about this potential to be destructive. And here the female Moani resists him and comes up against him and is quite resilient. So it really, I think, resonates with themes also in indigenous communities around trauma and how it gives rise to violence.
Yeah, the Maui character is banished for 1,000 years to an island after he steals the heart of Tafiti, which we come to find out is an act he does for the sake of humans. He says that with the heart of Tafiti, he's giving humans the power to create life itself, or I think allegorically to just have the amazing capacity to produce the material world in the way humans do so uniquely and destructively. And that the almost immediate effect of this act is for this blight to start emanating from the island of Tafiti that is the goddess. And it is eventually that blight that reaches the island of Motunui and threatens them, that sends Moana on her mission. There is both a personal trauma and a personal destructiveness, but there's very clearly a message about the environment and about our relationship with the environment as a species, as a powerful species, and what we can do with it when we harness our knowledge of natural power, of natural forces.
Yeah, the ocean is a character in this film. The animation really draws out heavily the kind of the spirits of nature and the potential for renewal. So it has at the end a message of restoration and hope in that magical way that and reassuring way that children's films often include. But I like the fact that the characters had potential for both good and bad. They were not stark, all good, all bad figures like you often see in Western narratives, and particularly in graphic novels and cartoons.
Well, there's comic books and superheroes especially. There's often a very stark line between good and bad, or they try to, and it's often hard to actually make.
And here there is that duality within people and within the forces operating in this film. And in that sense, it draws on, I think, a more, in some ways, morally advanced mythology than what we often see in the Western canon as they're taken into films.
One of the criticisms has to do with this film has to do with the absence of a goddess I mentioned in the on-air conversation, Hina, who's paired with Maui. And there, I think, are a lot of reasons to see that absence as not really an absence, but just a displacement, in that the singular character of a goddess named Hina is displaced onto various characters in the film. There is Moana herself, who is a very heroic character, but then there is the grandmother, who is a figure of connection to sacred and powerful knowledge from the past, both the knowledge of where the blight comes from and then the knowledge of the voyaging.
She's the keeper of the culture, cultural wisdom and knowledge, and very much the spirit that Moana draws on in her voyage.
And so it seems like even though none of these characters themselves have an overt supernatural power, the closest is maybe the ocean itself parting for Moana as it does, or putting her back on the boat as it does. But really, we need to think more in terms of transcendence rather than fantastic supernatural power, that is really what the power of the human story comes to, is our ability to transcend conditions and conditioning.
And in this, humans are not just suffering the fate of the gods, but yeah, are agents in their own history, but rely on forces that have magical elements to assist them.
But also, the Moana character doesn't rely on Maui as a man. She is not in any kind of way destined to be erotically attached to him, and she isn't really subordinate to his goals.
That's been an attractive element of the plot line to many girls and women or audiences that are attentive to female protagonists. She struggles with this man she depends on, Maui, but and keeps bouncing back as he tries to expel her from his powers and refuses to assist her, finally does. But she doesn't seduce him into assisting her. She demands it. And so she does not draw on any kind of feminine seduction narrative to get him to work on her behalf. So I think there's something important about that aspect of it. She wasn't just on her own independent of men, but she made demands on him. You must teach me the skills I need as a voyager. Mm-hmm. You must help me here, and if you don't, I'll do it on my own, but I need you.
She does seduce him, though, in the sense that she uses his own desire to be important and to have a story. She is appealing to, like, the tattoos on his body that document his great feats. And there's this sense in which she uses his own self-love to seduce himself into assisting her, into hearing her as like his way out of mediocrity or nothingness.
And there's an element of mocking the hero narrative of his. Actually, he's very frightened, and some of his hypermasculinity is a performance, and so there's an element of mocking as well as making use of his self-ideal as a hero that could also be seen as either funny, or I think some Pacific Islanders saw that as too mocking of that character. And there is maybe always that judgment call around when you introduce some comedic element, who's paying the price of the joke here? Is it a certain kind of oppressive masculinity, or is an indigenous manhood that has been traumatized and should be treated with more respect?
Yeah, I read that one indigenous viewer, you know, was dissatisfied with Maui for being this figure who's hurt and is hurt in this way that doesn't seem to actually to them reach resolution or healing. And they say, you know, I don't want my child to look up to this as somebody who they want to be. The Maui character is traditionally this culture hero who stands up to tyrannical forces and is always trying to help humanity overcome the forces of nature allayed against them.
But often the real experience people have with their heroes is that they have clay feet and are so imperfect and fail people in so many ways. So maybe it's not so bad to have that kind of representation of a hero. I don't know. I mean, there are other ways of assessing that, and it's not probably for us to judge outside of that community whether that's an adequate representation of that figure.
Going back to Moana and how she's not relying on a man, it's not just her relationship with Maui that fleshes this out, but it's just her whole life up to that point. She is the daughter of the chief, but she is not a princess and fights with Maui over this. And when she's on the island, before she sets out on her journey, preparing to take over as chief, she is learning the cultural practices and ways and wisdom, and is sought after as somebody with wisdom about how to, say, deal with the blight when it starts to emerge on the island, or how to pass down the dances that bring the rains and becoming a culture bearer in that way. And there's no sense in which she is not capable or permitted to that role unless she has a husband. There's no talk of a husband coming along for her whatsoever. There's no suitors at all for her.
Yeah, I mean, there is always this conflict, I feel, about royalty and its place in indigenous storytelling, which, and of course, the many indigenous societies have a history of royalty that has its own hierarchies, and where the important people are the royal family, and how to be critical of that. There's a wonderful book by a Maori writer called Once Were Warriors that does address that, the oppressiveness of Maori traditions based on royalty and a hierarchy within Maori traditions. It's a wonderful book that addresses that. I think in animated films, royalty often is, like Freud used to say, Freud once said, we all want to remain His Majesty the Baby or Her Majesty the Baby, that as a child we have to give up this sense of the centrality in our parents' lives or the world. And I think this idea of royalty plays a part in development as well. But I do think it's problematic also in how Disney draws on that theme in countless films, Lion King and Mulan, and also interesting film that had some of these feminist sensibilities to it.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
It goes on and on. I'm Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I've been talking with Jan Hocken about the children's film Moana.